Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:05 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 7th. The Nasdaq recouped most of the decline that it put in on Friday, and it is closing in on the 13,000 level. I've still got a short-term trading short open in the Nasdaq. I used it as a hedge against the potential that we might have a deeper pullback, which might affect some of the other positions I've got. Not particularly working out right now, and I may just pull it tomorrow, subject to events, of course. Something that we're seeing right now is that there is a return to renewed fervor for risk assets. So when we think about the Nasdaq, it has rebounded, but it is underperforming other indices. The S&P 500, for example, is at a new high and doing so on a reasonably dynamic manner and countermanding the downside key we had. Of course, the key to the key is always size, and when you don't have size, you definitely need downside follow-through. We didn't have any of that. The Dow Jones Industrials Average has also pushed on to new highs. The Transportation Index is at new highs as well, are close to new highs. When we think about the Russell 2000, it has been clearly outperforming now for the last few months, and it popped on the upside again in here today. So there's certainly appetite for risk, and that is nowhere more apparent than in Bitcoin. And the price went up to 40,000 in here today, up from 30,000 3 days ago. So this has been a really quite impressive move. I really think that the only rational way to pay attention to the price is on a log scale basis, because even though there is an increasingly large futures market and increasing participation by institutions, the vast majority of investors in Bitcoin are still cash investors, and they're more interested in percentage gains than in points gained. Well, the Ethereum price is up to approximately $1,250. It surmounted the $1,200 level in here, and it has also been resurgent, up from about $900 to $1,200 in the space of 4 days. So that's also really quite impressive. A 33% advance in a few days in any asset is a lot. One thing that I think is particularly interesting right now is that Tesla is in fact underperforming Bitcoin for the first time in quite some time. It had really been outperforming for most of the period through from the end of 2019, or the middle of 2019 in truth, but it broke down to a new reaction low over the last few days. So now we're at a period where even the best performing stock and the one that has got one of the most aggressive uptrends is underperforming Bitcoin. I've often regarded Tesla as a lightning rod for speculation. So we clearly have clear evidence of speculation in Tesla. It's closing on the high of the day in here today, up to $815. The total market cap for cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin and all the others, exceeded $1 trillion in here today. Tesla, at a market cap of $773 billion, is lagging somewhat. As we look at valuations, I think this is one of the best ways to think about the market right now. Tesla is trading on a price to sales ratio of 26. So that's aggressive to say the least, but it doesn't really matter at the present time. It's not something that investors are willing to pay much attention to, because when we think about what's going on, well, Tesla has approximately $14.5 billion in cash, and it's got free cash flow of about $2 billion. So arguably it could proceed as it is for a couple of years at least without having to worry about raising new capital. So that's, I think, one of the at the major challenges, or at least it could proceed for another year, would probably be the easy way of thinking about things. Therefore, there's no imminent price pressure. This is very similar to how people think about the bond market. With bonds, it's less about whether the price of the bond is going to rise, but rather, are you at risk of an imminent loss, of default? So I think in many respects, what people are viewing the equity market as now is in terms of like a bond, in that the imminent risk of complete dissolution and bankruptcy of some of these companies is not imminent. So therefore, the valuation doesn't really matter as long as the fuel necessary to continue to push these prices onto new highs is still made available. So this is, without the shadow of a doubt, a liquidity-fueled rally, and the outlook for liquidity is by far the most important factor. Now, when we think about that in terms of what happened yesterday in the Capitol in Washington, and frame that within the wider theme of the rise of populism, the fracturing of the status quo, the lurch to the extremes of both the populist left and the populist right, and how that has widened and created this polarity in terms of political discourse, not just in the USA, but elsewhere as well, then it's all representative of both the aftermath of globalization, the official and institutional response to the credit crisis in 2008, and then the adoption of quantitative easing. All of these constituent factors have led us to where we are in here today. Obviously, any kind of violence from protest should be equally, I think, called out by all politicians of all persuasions. Unfortunately, that just does not seem to be the case. We certainly have seen that Republican policymakers called out the protests in the summer, which were in many respects driven by the desire of the Democrats to overthrow the Trump administration. Today, we're seeing the Democrats decry the protests, and obviously they turned violent and invaded the Capitol building, which is an order of magnitude worse than looting private businesses, but less so from the Trump's supporters within the Republican Party. Obviously, this is reflective of the deterioration of discourse. Obviously, it's to be hoped that this will be a catalyst for more bipartisan measures and a return to more moderate policies. But it's certainly not something that we can guarantee, because there are still an awful lot of very disgruntled people. And placating those people is not just going to require calm words, but spending. And there is going to have to be a great deal of spending. And this is not just a US phenomenon. This is happening everywhere. 10-year Treasury yields pushed up again in here today. What I find rather interesting right now is that if we look at Australian and New Zealand bonds, they are also pushing up through the 1% level and have clear base formation characteristics. It's very similar for the New Zealand 10-year government bond. It hasn't quite yet broken out. It is around the 1% level. And it does look like it is going to clear this level and now then very clearly break the sequence of lower rally highs. Might be in the process of doing it right now, but we haven't seen it quite yet. But we've had massive compression in yields everywhere over the course of the last few years. Not so long ago, I remember that David had a long in the New Zealand dollar versus the pound because he could pick up the overnight interest rate. And that was something that was a real money spinner because of the massive interest rate differential. But the one thing that's happened over the last few years is that international interest rate differentials have basically completely disappeared. And the yield differential that one can pick up today from investing anywhere has basically been completely eroded. So that is also a reflection of this massive demand for yield. And of course, it has been particularly acute over the last 12 months because of the massive quantity of debt that is trading with negative yields. And that is still at very high levels of just over 17.5 trillion. But even in Germany, we're seeing that bond yields are starting to rise, although they are still in negative territory overall. The Japanese government bond yield has also been firming. It's in positive territory and looks likely that it will pop back up and test the 10 basis point level where the Bank of Japan has said that they're going to defend. One thing that I think is less appreciated is that since the Bank of Japan said that they were going to defend the 10 basis point level on the 10-year yield, then they've had to buy fewer bonds overall. And that's something that I think is going to come back and raise questions about exactly what's likely in terms of the US bond market. With yields back above 1%, breaking out of the base put in through most of 2020, and the clear potential that the US government is going to print significant additional money and commit to additional significant spending measures, both to some of the spending plans that the Democrats are likely to be very keen on. Would one be to bail out some of the municipals because they are in Democrat-controlled areas? But that's several hundred billion. Then they will also like to have additional unemployment benefits and push those on for an additional few quarters. Something that I think is very likely, regardless of who had won the election, for the simple reason that which politician in their right mind is going to be the person that takes unemployment benefits away from people when they have no prospect of getting back into the normal work that they had been doing. They're at least going to have to see sustained economic recovery before those unemployment benefits are removed. And there is the real possibility that they may never be removed. It might form part of a new social contract overall. So one of the reasons why we have this speculative environment overall is because bonds are pulling back, and because we have this very clear outperformance in a number of companies. Another one that has really got no earnings at all, but it does have plenty of cash, is Roku. And this is another company, this time trading at a price to sales ratio of 30, and yet it still marches higher because they have cash in the bank. And they have a trillion, excuse me, they have a billion in cash, and they've got a free cash flow of about negative 24 million. So they can survive for really quite a long time with that much cash in the bank. In other words, all of these types of instruments are lightning rods for liquidity. As long as liquidity remains likely to be pushed into the market, then we are likely to see a sustained bid for some of these highly speculative ventures. And Bitcoin is often regarded as a safe haven asset, but it behaves more like a risk asset. It trades like a risk asset. Now, the one thing that I think is particularly relevant, and it's something that we should perhaps pay some attention to, is that it did fantastically well in late 2017 and peaked around Christmas time. And then when we look at the S&P 500, well, that peaked in early 2018. So that was a response to the quantitative tightening. And then it really didn't do very well all the way through 2018 because the Federal Reserve kept raising interest rates. So it wasn't until they decided that they were going to stop doing that and start cutting interest rates again that the market started to do well again. So if we then think about Bitcoin, it may well be a lightning rod for speculative flows and also a useful barometer of risk appetite, so that when it does eventually peak, then it's likely to act as a lead indicator for trouble in the stock market overall. Then when we think about what's going on in terms of the dollar, well, the dollar index was positive in here today. Now, it's oversold in the short term. I don't think that there's any question of that. And the index is also back in the region of a significant low from back in 2018. So with the stock market starting to do better, with speculative interest moving into highly risky assets, and with yields on bonds starting to move back up again, then there may be a bid for the dollar as international flows start to come back into the US in the short term. Eventually, we're definitely going to see the Federal Reserve act on trying to contain the run-up in yields on the long end of the curve. There's just no way that the US government can afford to fund the national debt if they have to refinance at progressively higher rates. One of the reasons why the governments of the world have been able to engage in massive fiscal stimulus was because of the huge contraction in yields that basically compressed their refinancing costs and reduced the interest expense on the increasing quantity of debt to lower levels than it was before the pandemic, even with higher total values overall. And that looks wonderful, as long as yields don't rise. But yields are rising, and therefore, it is going to put progressively more pressure on the ability of governments to fund themselves the higher these yields go. We're only really 2 days into this move, but the higher that bond yields rise, the more pressing the pressure will be on liquidity overall. Now, one of the reasons why we had problems in early 2018 was because of liquidity factors. And I think people need to start thinking about what happened in terms of the repo markets when liquidity started to tighten up as well. The Federal Reserve ramped up its support to the repo market by $450 billion overnight in order to compress overnight yields or overnight spreads. So it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that they will act if yields continue to rally. I think that if yields continue to rally, it will encourage additional flows into the dollar. And if we want to see an example of what that looked like, well, we had a significant run-up in the yield for the Chinese 10-year bond. But now those yields are starting to come back in again because the strength of the renminbi and the higher interest rate differential that encouraged people to come in and start buying those Chinese bonds and to pick up the 3.25%. If the yield on 10-year bonds starts to push back up, well, then it will also encourage flows into the US market, probably also then strengthen the dollar. And before we start to see yields coming back down with the Fed's inevitable moves. Well, that also suggests that as we look at short-term overbought conditions in a number of Asian markets, The Nifty, for example, is right above the 14,000 level right now. It's done phenomenally well off the lows in March, and there is clear scope that we're going to get some pause and consolidation overall. Some of the less better performing markets like Indonesia have been pausing over the course of the last 3 weeks, and they are also liable to have some pause and consolidation, but not nearly as overextended, for example, as India is. When we think about the rather stellar performance that we've seen in Taiwan, it's performing very similarly to the semiconductors index overall. These markets have been doing fantastically well for the last couple of years, and they also have clear short-term overbought conditions. These trends remain consistent overall, but a lot of it is still dependent on liquidity flows. And what happens with the dollar is likely to have a knock-on effect for Asian iterations. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the Japanese market, well, the Nikkei has been resurgent over the last few weeks. It has clearly broken through and above the 25,000 level. When we think about the fact that it had 3 years of ranging underneath that, then it's quite likely that it will stay overbought for a while, as ranges are explosions waiting to happen. But the defining characteristic of both European and Japanese markets has been that they were capable of rallying when their currencies were appreciating. Well, the yen today was quite a bit weaker, and it's back in the region of the lows from all the way back, it's in the region of the highs for the yen and lows for the dollar from back in March. If we see upside follow through tomorrow, then it would break this downward bias for the dollar overall. So we are potentially on the cusp of a recovery in the short term for the dollar. When the Federal Reserve eventually intervenes to arrest the advance in yields, then it's likely to reverse again. But it is oversold in the short term. So when we then think about commodity markets, they have tended to do rather well when the dollar is weak and the continuous commodity index is now in the process of breaking up and out of a five-year base formation. It's a little overbought in the short term. It's certainly taking its lead from the impressive performance of the solar sector and the wind sector. That renewable energy is certainly the cause celebre right now, and it's been doing almost as well as Tesla and Bitcoin has. So it's also reflective of this liquidity. So the obvious point here is that liquidity rules everything, and it is the thing we need to pay closest attention to as we monitor the consistency of these trends. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.